I wanted to discuss some of the basic issues in Masna Mashkasa Batora here in the source sheet. What I just wanted to cover today is the basic shita of the Ramban and the Rashba. But I think we should start off with just a word on this long tosos in Ksivis Nun Vav Amud Aleph, just to nail down what are the main theories. What are the main theories about Masna Mashkasa Batora and why it wouldn't work? And then talk about the application to Mamon. So did anybody get a chance to read through the long tosos in Ksivis Nun Vav Amud Aleph? Anybody, Gabriel Akir, did you guys get a chance to work through that tosos? Akir, did you get a chance?
Yeah.
So you want to tell us like the main, what's like the main theory of tosos over here about why that wouldn't work?
I think I'm going to have to go get real more food, but I'll pass it off to someone else.
Gabe, you want to take it over for Yakir? Gabe?
Yes, sorry, I'm on my phone. Just trying to make sure I can see your screen. I think this is the part of Tosfos where the Re says that there's like Tanai is a Inbo Elechidusho, and we need to follow the precedent set by B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven, otherwise there's no reason Tanai should work at all. And so in the context of Tanai B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven, they weren't Masna Mashkasa with Torah, therefore there's no precedent to be Masna against the Torah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Meaning, Tosos here goes in for what I think is pretty idiosyncratic theory, but you start with the premise that no Tanayim should work. If you try to effect some sort of legal status, that thing has to be absolute. There's no reason to think that you could impose a condition on the thing you're trying to create. Is that right, Gabe?
Yeah, that's how we understood it.
Yeah. So what do you guys make of that premise over here that Tosis begins with? This notion that you would think that no Tznayim should work as a general rule, and then, you know, the Torah never, since the Torah is never mechadesh that Masla Masha Kosta Batorah should be effective, you fall back on the status quo ante that conditions are presumptively invalid unless there's some clear source to validate them. Is that like a plausible, you think, point of departure, or none of you feel strongly about that?
Seems similar to the Miri.
What?
It seems almost similar to the Miri, with Miri also what didn't seem to want to sort of bend the technical definition and then had to create a whole new category based on it.
Okay. The Miri didn't say this generally about Tanayim, though, did he, Adam?
No, but he said it about this case specifically.
Okay, but here he said, here the Tosa says, Havamina deshum Tanai, ena mevatla samaisa, lo yiskayim beso, pamasa kayim. So you like, there's this status quo ante where no Tanayim are effective, and Masna Mashkasa Batora is just like one of the things that the Torah did not create a special allowance for. So you fall back on that Shum Tanayeno Eno Mevatal Samaisa.
Well, is Tosot saying this as broadly, like, if he, like, almost like it can't mean literally no Tanayim ever work, because that's like all of monetary relationships are just time. But I think, like, I'm saying it's Eno Mevatal Tamasa, saying like the idea that you could have a Tanay on any sort of, like, I don't know, like anti-halachic topic or something like that. Like when there's some sort of like set up maaseh described by the Torah, then what, like maybe it is a chiddush that you can adjust it in some way.
Well, like let's say you're saying this sale will be valid if you pay me $300,000 and invalid if you pay me anything less than that.
Right. So I think Toso would probably say like, Toso can't actually mean that, because then like if I agree, if we agree to like that, I'll come to your house at 7 p.m. and then you'll pay me. Like, oh, is me coming at 7 p.m. at Tanai, and like they're like, obviously, like, so it must be like the masa here is more narrow, that like the masa is like a mitzvah or a din or something like that, that the that no, so pick your lulav or shomrim.
Let's take a nazir case, right? I'll be a nazir if condition X obtains. Tosas is saying that l'chatchila, you would think that you couldn't make a conditional nazirus. You couldn't make a conditional kedushin. All those maisim have to be created absolutely.
I think that's not crazy.
All right, I'm saying, but that's Tosas' suggestion, right? You would think that
It's
Kiddush HaTorah that you could be a Nazir al-Tanai that something is satisfied. It's a Kiddush HaTorah that you could create a Kiddush al-Tanai. The default is that all these things have to be absolute.
Yeah, you
that rule holds true for the Masna Mashkas Batorah category, right? So
yeah, like you could say either there's full Gmir Stas or there's no Gmir Stas, and like there's no... like a Tanai somewhere in between, and maybe you need full in order to cross the threshold. And
that's a good way of putting it, right? That's a good way of putting it. It's like a variation of the Asmachta idea. You know, everyone always asks, what's the difference between Asmachta and Tanai? And it's a very delicate area of halacha, like to figure out the difference. Tosas is basically saying there is no difference. Neither of them should be valid. Just there's a Chiddush HaTorah to allow certain types of Tanai. But before you get to that Chiddush HaTorah, transactions, chaluyos have to be created absolutely or not at all, right?
Yeah, like we could like quibble of does Tosos mean this when it comes to Dine Mamonos also? Like does Tosos think that it's a, like your sale question, is that included, that maybe Havamina either you sell something or you don't sell it, or is like the idea of like Kol Tanai Shel Mamon Kayam, like a Din D'Oraisa, that's like separate.
Good. So we're gonna look in a few minutes at the Kol Tanai Shel Mamon discussion to see that very important machlok asking the Rashba and the Ksos on that question. Now I just want to draw your attention to this later formulation in Tosos. Tosos here is dealing with an objection to the Gemara Menachos, and I thought this line is really interesting. Anybody want to, Gabe or Yakir, you want to take us through this line? Tell us, Marie.
Yeah, so this seems to assume that, I can read it. Do you want me to read it?
Tell us what it says, and then you could.
So he says, we only say Masa Mashka, so the Tanai is Bata, Alehecha, Shet, Miskaven Lakor, Masha Kasuba Torah. But in the case of the Nazir's case, he thought that it was reasonable to give his korban or cut his hair in Beis Chonio, and his intention wasn't to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah.
Right. This reminds me always of like the Nesivis on Lo Sasur, it's like Kavanas Mered is what like creates the Yisr. And it sounds to me like Tosus is saying something similar for Masna Mashkas Batorah. It's only considered problematically being Masna Mashkas Batorah if your intention is to go against the Torah principle.
Also because Snivik, Negud, and Neruvin could have, like, under some theory, be considered Masna Mashkas Batorah, right? Like, they were, like, doing something that probably wasn't the game plan, you know? But they weren't doing it on a slim road.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're saying like, but the question is like, did they like what were they thinking when they wanted to stay on the Avera Yarden, right? Presumably they were just really strong Zionists, like Eretz Yisrael on both sides of the Jordan, you know. So, sorry.
Another read of this.
But the point is, it's not the fact of the matter of going against the Din Torah. It's like the attempt to go up against, it's like the intention to challenge it and go up against it. Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, could you read this as in a very different way, that we don't take his Tanai seriously, we don't assume he intended it, he had Gmiras Das for this Tanai if he knew it was against the Torah. And so, but if he didn't know, then like, he probably did have Das for this Tanai, even if it's not valid.
That's very interesting. So I think you're saying, don't read it my way in like the Kavanas Mered interpretation. Why not just look at this through the lens of do we think he was serious? So if he's like, no one can be serious in trying to be Oger Dini Torah, that your point, Gabe?
Yeah, just like you, we human beings don't have the cost to do that, and he wouldn't have intended something like that.
Okay. So I think I hear the argument. That's closer to Rabbeinu Tam's theory that we'll see in a second. But I just think the words here don't really support the mind state. Like, does he have proper gemiras das? You see what I'm saying, Gabe? I think it's ikar chasam and a sefer, if that's what you're trying to read into these three lines.
Yeah, I hear the critique.
The focus is just whether you're in a scavenging lock, or I think if you're saying what you're saying, you'd want to see like an extra phrase about, and therefore he's not serious. That sound reasonable, Gabe?
Yeah, I think I'm mowed that to you on that point.
All right, great. Okay, and then I just want to, this Havamin and Tosos in the next line, I think is really far out there. Tosus has a havamina here that if you take masla mashkasa batorah b'davar shel mamon seriously, then you couldn't be mocha, you couldn't swap out piron hachov with somebody doing labor for you. You guys see this? Gabe, why don't you take us through these two lines here, v'imtamar.
Yeah, so he says, v'imtamar kevin d'shayach masla mashkasa batorah afilu gabe mamon, imkein lo yucha adam limchol chovo li olam aydei tnai.
Yeah. That's his answer already. What's his question here?
So he says that if we assume the scope of this din, it includes all kinds of agreements and all kinds of bin adam mechavir relationships, then you could never alter the original terms of the halva.
Right. And why is that so implausible? Like, what's the, like, why doesn't Tosus bite that bullet and say, yeah, you can't, if Shua owes me $100, I can't just say, oh, instead of paying me back $100, Shua, just, you know, do these legal services for me instead and we'll call it even. Right. Tosus is basically saying, wait, like, Masna Mash Kasaba Torah should preclude that type of arrangement, right? I say mihayom b'chol kamacholacha. So what's the back and forth there? And what's Tosis's answer?
I don't know. I don't have a great explanation. If anybody else wants to jump in,
so he's saying like mihu malve lo chashvina ksuva b'torah, saying that like either whether it's malve locally or maybe broader, that like the relationship of malve and lova is not one that's like etched in stone in the Torah or something like that.
Yeah, what's that getting at?
That's either a chalos or a field. It's like similar to like the lok peda rachmana, maybe like from the different, that was different Tosfos last time, but like
yeah
like that it's no. Not that's not under the purview of like the, there are certain rules the Torah have like ex ante didn't want us to adjust, and malvalova is not one of them.
Yeah. Meaning it's almost like the Torah, he's struggling here to figure out what's like a strict Torah chalos and what isn't. And he's saying, well, if you go in too strong for this view, it would turn out that you can't even be mocha lachov, right? Because if you lend somebody money, how could he be masna out of the piron? Like every loan would require like actual payment to be satisfied. There's no way of waiving the payment. And Tosis' answer, I think, is a strange answer. Tosis is saying, like Adin said, oh, the Torah is not really makbid on halvos. Like, we wouldn't view a halva as a strict, non-defeasible Torah halos. Right, Adin?
Yeah. I'm trying to be, like, so, I said, like, oh, but, like, there are some monetary things, like, Zichin, Arachim, Pijin, Aben, that you can't, like, those are ksuva b'Torah, but a regular mavalova or a sale or something like that isn't.
Yeah, yeah. So Tosa then says, oh, but, you know, Nezikin, that's considered Milbach Suba Torah, and that's really set in stone, and it's non-alterable. But that leads Tosfos in the next line, the next paragraph here, to question that, right? What's Aval Kasha? What's this?
I think if we want to go back to, like, the end of that paragraph before is maybe an attempt at, like, the different, like, things that that Kamikoach Svara, the reason obviously, like, you're allowed to be mochel a hava because, like, it's Svarahu, like, that's like we can make our own arrangements, but, like, things that are chiddush in the first place, like Pidyon HaBen or Arachin or something like that, those are Chiyuve Torah or something like that.
Okay, but it's still surprising to me, Mishu, I'm curious to hear what you think about this line. You know, Tosos famously distinguishes between Nezikin, Erchin, which Misvar lo yimachavin on lehu, im lo shechav aso Torah. But Milva, as Adin says, kuli alma modi delo tarfa mi mishabdi, dein abba mikoach haTorah. Like the rule that a regular milva, one that does not have shibudim, everybody agrees you don't need the Torah to tell you that principle. Because it's just a svaru, sheyesh l'shalei mashalava mimenu. So, like, that's not really the Torah principle. That's not, like, a true, like, thing that's regulated by the Torah. Isn't that a strange inference? Shua, what were you going to say? You're muted.
I don't know if Tosos saying that it's just, like, hush it because it's, like, inalienable, like, your property is not going to get taken if you don't have, like, a shibud, or is Tosos saying that we don't have a mikar for this, so the fact that it's so assumed is, like, clear that it's just misfara.
I think if you polled a good, like, Talmud of halachic man off the street, and you said, is, like, dine milve velove, mala velove, just like misvara, they'd go nuts on you. No? They'll say that's like the Platonic forms of the Torah are malva v'loving. No?
It's a little bit of a... No, I think... What do you mean? It's like... I feel like it's the Platonic form of, like, the things that would have existed without the Torah, which is not, like, such a stressful concept since all the Rishonim believe in
it. Right. Right, but I guess it's just... it's strange to think, oh, like, because this is so obvious, like, it's not even subject to the Maslamash Kasuba Torah rules, right? You're never entangled in those types of questions when it comes to obvious things like halvos. I guess it's interesting because let me put it this way. It's like Tosa's trying to be machalic just between, like, contractual relationships and relationships governed by, like, external choshen mishpat norms separate from the das of the parties. You think Tosa is maybe working along those lines? Gabe, Adam?
And how is this different? We had the same question last year in general, right? That what do we do by dini mamimos when we are not in Eretz Yisrael, when we're not a society governed by Jewish law, right? Usually we follow minhag hamakom. So this is not a similar concept.
This very much relates to the minhag hamakom question exactly. Right.
So would it be the same, a similar reason at least to what we have over there?
Yeah, maybe.
Again, it's a finish, but
yeah, like, I mean, this formulation de'in abam mikach haTorah is a really striking formulation about the, you know, the din of a malva of a loba having to pay back the malva.
Right.
So in any event, Tosos draws this distinction, but then he realizes even in the Zikin, which Tosos said is something that you wouldn't have had misvara, the rules couldn't just have been known self-evidently. So Tosos says, Neima shalo yuchal limchol, demasnehu amasha kasuba Torah. V'chite mahachanami, v'atanan b'achovel kras ksusi shaveres kadi amanas liftor potter. So what's Tosos doing in this line? So Tosos, what's the concern?
He's making the claim that, like, by case in Nezikin, you know, what to do is not exactly a Platonic form that could just be derived. Purely from life. You need the Torah for it.
Well, Tosos said that in the line previously, that's right. you need the Torah to macharish dinei nezikin. But then he's worried and he's saying, wait a second, if nezikin is this Platonic form that the Torah kind of gives us, then you shouldn't be allowed to be mochel in the same way that you can't be mas namash kasba Torah. So I think another way of putting the question is, what's the difference between mechila and mas namash kasba Torah b'davar shel mamon? Yekir, is that how you read the question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and what is Tosfos' answer to that?
I read it, or?
Yeah, tell us about it.
Briefly, Tosfos just says there is a difference between exercising the power of Mechila and making a Tanai, which uproots the entire institution. Tosfos compares this to this distinction about the different formulations of Aruna and Shvius. We find a different sigyos that there's a difference between saying that the whole concept of Onah doesn't exist versus saying that being mochel Onah in this particular situation.
Yeah, so there appears to be a distinction, at least Tosfos argues there's a distinction between the concept of mechila, where the Torah institution is in place, and the concept of tnayim, where you're trying to tamper with the institution itself. Is that right, Yekir? You're trying to, like, one case, you're trying to modify the rules, and the other case, the rules are intact. You're just not asserting them or waiving them. Is that the idea, Yekir?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, you think that's like a very clean or compelling distinction?
I think it's like a reasonable direction to go in. I think the details are a little bit fuzzy in some places. But.
Right, how do you understand the difference between Amanasha and Lechalai Din Sherekses Ve'ona and the idea of Amanasha and Lechalai Sherekses Ve'ona?
What was that question again?
Yeah, I mean, Tosfos' whole point is that we want to distinguish between Amanasha Ein Lachalai Din Sherekses Ve'ona and Amanasha Ein Lachalai Sherekses Ve'ona. So it's like, if you say that the laws don't apply to us, then that's Mashlam Maskas Torah and the Tanai is invalidated. But if you say that the law applies, just the actual, like the application is irrelevant, something like that, you're not going to have Sherekses Ve'ona, then that's permissible and that's valid. But here, doesn't that sound so tenuous? Like, it's hard to appreciate the real legal difference between those, no?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, to Tosfos, I mean, clearly, like, what's important is this particular distinction to Tosfos. I mean, Tosfos thinks the problematic aspect here is asserting that the Torah laws don't apply. So as long as you do it in such a way that you're not asserting the Torah laws don't apply, then you're fine.
So for example, if I were to say, Yakir, if you harm me, we're not bound by the legal rule. We're not bound by the legal rules of Nezikin. So if you were to harm me, the legal rules of Nezikin would not be effective on us, something like that. So that would be a Tanai Batala Maisakayim. But if you harm me, I could be mochel my right to compensation. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that right.
Do you think there's a difference between being mochel your right to compensation versus being mochel your compensation within Tosfos' scheme, or it's hard to know?
Yeah, this is where the details are fuzzy. I think it's hard to know.
Right. So for example, is the woman waiving her right to Sherekses Ve'ona? Or is she waiving her Sherekses Ve'ona? Is there a difference? Is that somehow different from Amanasha Ein Lachalai Din? I think it's hard to know exactly what the core distinction Tosis wants. Gabe, looks like you had a thought on this.
Yeah, two thoughts. First of all, if this follows from the merit argument, which you suggested earlier, then you don't need such a clear legal difference. You need like a difference in tone and in orientation, but you don't need to prove that there's like a tangible legal difference between these two wordings.
Yeah, agreed. I guess I think that's right. Meaning if you're going in for this merit theme, then it's all about the, like, how much are you butting heads, right? So the more you say Amanasha and Lachalai Din, there's greater headbutting going on than in any other formulations. That's the idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. The thing is, Tosis itself, it's not clear how much. Tosis doesn't tell us that he's working within that paradigm here, but I definitely hear the suggestion. Okay, then Tosis pivots, and this is the last point I want to make in Tosos. Tosis pivots to a second way of distinguishing Nezikin from Kedushin. Again, the presupposition here is that why is it obviously okay, according to everybody, that you could say krak susi yamanasli pater? So in Nezikin, you could vade bimochel, but it seems controversial that you could bimochel sherek sosvona, at least on some formulations. So whereas Tosis's first answer is to say, well, they're all the same. It just depends whether you say amanasha in lachalai din or whether you're mochel just the zchus. Here Tosis wants to say there's no distinction between amanasha in lachalai din sherek sosvona versus amanasha in lachalai sherek sosvona. Really, there's a distinction between the Nezikin and Kedushin. And so what's this distinction that Tosis offers? Yakir, you want to just tell us what that distinction is?
Yeah, so Tosis claims that you have this principle of Kedushin L'chatzai, and in Nezikin L'chatzai, that certain Torah institutions are packages that you cannot modify, and other Torah institutions are not.
Right. I think this Tosos really just brings to the fore. I mean, so Yakir's right. So it's like now it becomes an empirical quest to divine which Torah institutions are defeasible and which ones aren't. Right, Yakir?
Yeah.
I think this Tosos really just shows how difficult this sugya of Maslamash Kasabator is. The Rishonim are really searching for clean principles that explain all the cases. And there just doesn't appear to be one unifying theme to explain the differences between when you can be Maslamash Kasabator, when you can't, what distinguishes Mechila from Tanayim. And, you know, Tosos really just throws out a potpourri of possibilities. Neither of which seems to be compelling on its own. So you know, Tosos has a whole cholent here of different considerations that would bear on whether you can make Maslamash Kasabat Torah. Any further thoughts on this Tosos before we move on? I don't have anything more to say on Tosos other than the fact that Tosos is really struggling to find the underlying principle, and he has a few different ways of cutting up the sigyas. Okay, I want to move us now to, this Ramban in Bava Basra, Kuchavav Mebeis. One formulation I think that really stands out is, first of all, Tosis' citation of Rabbeinu Tam. So let's see. So what's this idea that Tosis cites B'Shem Rabbeinu Tam about why Masna Mashkasa B'Torah is no good? Clearer than Tosis's formulation. Adam, do you get a chance to see this Ramban?
No, but I could read it here.
Yeah, sure. Tell us what the Ramban's saying in this line. Citing in the name of Rabbeinu Tam.
Well, He's making a tana that Eshelik Haimo Bisafo de Batel, but Alpha P Shekafal Tana O, Mishmin Sheino Ella Kamaflik.
Yeah. Hakanami Tano Batel, why?
No, about the love klumu, right? It's like he said nothing. I'll think of it being kamarle. Like he said, contradictory terms. Like, you want to say one thing, and you say not another thing, right? And you're trying doubling language, but since they're against each other, it's like you said nothing whatsoever.
So what's lahafalig vidvarim? Just to hyperbolize, right? To exaggerate.
Yeah.
So Ramban cites me to Tom as saying that whenever you're masna mash kasa b'torah, you're just like kimaflig vidvarim. It's just we interpret you as hyperbolizing. In the same way that when you make a tanai that's impossible to fulfill, we invalidate the tanai because we just view it as hyperbole, right? We can't take it. It's a tanai that we don't think was said seriously. I think that's like an interesting view of Tosafot citing Rabbi Natan, that whenever you're masma against the Torah, we just think that like you didn't have the right kind of kavana. Okay. The Ramban himself gives a different answer about why he thinks Masa Mashkasa Vitara is no good. This seems to me like a variation of something we saw in Tosos. Do you agree, Akir?
Sort of.
So how do you part of this? What's that?
Part of it is the inconditional chatzayin formulation is, but then there's this additional aspect of matzu makom lachol that you need, maybe this is sort of a side question but for the Ramban, you need both the fact that the institution is a package that you can't split, but also at the same time it somehow needs to be possible to split it in a different way, paradoxically.
Right. So if it gets a partial foothold, then it all comes. But like, how to get the partial foothold?
Yeah.
Is he saying the partial foothold is like theoretical physics, like? Like if I say Almanat that time starts running backwards, then there's no possibility foothold. So there's no makom lachul. But once there is, once it's theoretically possible, the fusion kicks in, and then once it kicks in, you can't divvy it up.
He seems to focus on the practical aspect, which again I don't really understand what's going on here, honestly. But he seems to focus like practically he can like there's like a practical possibility that he's just like not going to give her shirk this vote. So that's like because we can imagine like a just like on the ground just an area of ishas where shirk this vote are not being provided. Therefore, that's enough to give us matzu makom lachol. Again, I don't have a good explanation for how that happens or what's
going on. Yeah, I agree. I think this is, you know, somewhere in the line of like which chaluyos are defeasible. You know, it's like the Torah seems to insist that like nispashe de kedushin bekula, once you have partial chaluyos kedushin, then the whole thing comes into effect. To me, it seems similar to that idea in Tosos, but again, I agree with Dick here. You know, this formulation is very difficult, and it speaks again to like the difficulty of getting to clean principles in this sigya. We're going to come back to this formulation in the Ramban at the end here. Let's just take a quick look at it now, and we'll come back to this in the Ketzos. Yakir, what's the Ramban saying in this last line?
I'm not 100% sure. It sounds like maybe like Mamonos for the Ramban is always dependent on sort of the tvia, so to speak, of the other party.
Yeah, it sounds like the chiyuvim are contingent on what the parties want.
Yeah.
So we'll see. The ksos actually runs with this idea. So we'll come back to this formulation of the Ramban in a second. Very important formulation, at least the way the ksos picks it up. So keep that in the back of your mind. We're going to come back to this in 1 minute. Let's move now to the Rashba on Nivav Med Aleph. I think the Rashba is the most interesting shita in the discussion here, even if the Rashba's view itself is quite implausible, as a lot of the Achronim point out. Gabe, did you get a chance to see the Rashba?
We have not seen that yet.
Okay. Again, did you get a chance to see the Rashba? No?
Not yet. I'm happy to read through it now, but
I'll take us through it here carefully. So the Rashba is weighing in on the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and what he tries to do is to basically say there's no machlokas about whether you can mas na mash kasa b'tar b'davar shal mamon. And he starts off by saying this. Rabbi Yehuda de Amar b'davar shal mamon tina okayim, lav lemeimar disaber demas lamash kasa b'torah tina okayim, de hakayim lan kala mash lamash kasa b'torah tina obatel. Mekayim lan nami krab yudu de Amar b'davar shal mamon tina okayim. I think what he's trying to say in that sentence is that Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that you can mas lamash kasa b'torah b'davar shal mamon, doesn't think that it's an exception to the rule of ina de masne kol masne amash kas b'torah tina obatel. Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing with that principle, even within the realm of dinei mamonos. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda just has a story to tell about why the tanai is chal, and how it's not masna amash kas b'torah when it comes to dinei mamonos. So what's that story? So he says the following. Ella, Rabbi Meir Savar, Dal Menashe Emecha Olai Din Sher Biksus Ka'amar. When the guy says, just uses some pariv language, that I'll marry you on condition that we don't have Sher Ksus Vona, or Sher Biksus, the best way to interpret that statement is as an attempt to modify the basic rules of marriage. And then once we interpret it that way, he's trying to modify the Torah rules. The Torah fights back, and we void the Tanai. And it becomes a case, etc. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees only with regard to how to interpret the power of language on condition that you don't have share vixus. Rabbi Yehuda Savar delav din share vona vidino na kamar ela mechilas mamon yeshkan kolomar shetimcholi mamona ona o shetimcholi mamona share vixus o mamon nitan hu lemechila v'harei zekomar l'chaveiro kras ksusi v'hipater the mechilas mamon yeshkan v'kayim. So the way the Rashba wants to read this is that the Machlokas of Yehuda and Rav Meir is really a Machlokas of Metzias, or a legal, or maybe even a legal Machlokas, just about how to interpret Stam language about Amenashe Ein Lach Alai Sher Biksus. By default, do we interpret that as an attempt to modify the rules of Kiddushin? Or by default, do we just do we interpret that as some application of mechila? And that's really the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. There's no substantive disagreement about either your capacity to be mochel or about your capacity to be masla mash kasbatar. Everybody agrees you can be mochel. Everybody agrees you cannot be masla mash kasbatar in dinim amenis. The only question is, in ambiguous cases, when somebody says stam on condition that you don't have share of sus, do we fit that into Mechila language, or do we fit that into Amenash Ein Lach Alai Din language? Somebody see that? That's the, I think that's the Rashba's move. You guys agree with that reading? Thoughts? Bye, Adam. Yakir, Gabe, Adam, what do you guys think?
Yeah, that sounds like what he's saying.
Okay. Gabe, sounds good?
Yeah, it's disappointing. It doesn't make for a conceptually interesting hypothesis.
Yes, yes, that's right. It's very deflationary, right? Extremely deflationary. What's interesting, though, is how the Acharonim fight back against this. So if you look at the Ketzos quotes the Rashba. Here's Kashali Mashkasava Rashba Bechidushav, Shitav Kubetzes, blah, blah, blah. He has some interesting objections to the Rashba's interpretation. He thinks it's inconsistent with certain Gemaras. And he says, you know, from these Gemaras, he quotes a Gemara in Bar Mitzia. He has a few other cases. Mashma ditzna shelo al derech mechila vadei lo mahani. He thinks that these formulations imply contrary to the Rashba statement. So he says this. V'lechein nira lule divrei Rashba vashita degabe mamon afilu b'omer al menashe ein lecha alai din nami mahani. He thinks the Rashba is wrong to think that there is universal agreement such that if you were trying to alter the DNA Torah, it would be invalid. He thinks that's incorrect. He thinks Rashi supports that fact. Mashma lehajim yilashon Rashi, Resha Ksuvis, Resha Kosev, Gabi al-Menashe ein lecha alai ona, al-Menashe ein lecha alai din ona. So we would say, according to Yehuda, Mashma mashkasim b'Torah, b'davar shemom t'no kayim, even when you say Amanasha Emachalai Dinona, even when you're trying to alter the basic rules of the Torah. How could that be? So the Ketzos appeals to the Ramban that we just read in Bav Basra Kuf Chavav. And he zeroes in on the Ramban's language, where the Ramban explains Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Biyado Lomar Lo Shlo Yishayevlo, Shari Mocha, Vodavar Shemam Yachal Limcho, Shelo Amra Torah She Yishayev Elabir Tzono Shelzeh. Niramidvarab, dafilu masna shelo yischayev nami mahani. Like even if you're saying amanash ein lachalai din shervikstus, that would be valid. Why mishum da Torah lo chivaso ale b'ritzono shelzeh v'im ein ritzono b'chiyuva leka chiyuv klal. So what do you make of that? What's the Ketzos's interpretation of the Ramban as the alternative to the Rashba's view? What do you think what's the Ketzos saying here? It's pretty cool how he picks up on that formulation of the Ramban and turns it into like a whole theory of Masa Mashkasa B'davar Shel Mamon. Yakir, how do you take this line?
Seems to be saying that since by making a Tanai, you make it clear that you have no interest in this Chiyuv. So even if the Tanai won't go through as a Tanai, the Chiyuv still can't apply.
Okay. What do you think that says about? So what grounds the fact, according to the Ketzos, according to the Rashba, what grounds Masna Mashkasa B'Torah B'Davar Shel Mamon T'no Kayim is this concept of Mechila, right? You can't alter the Torah's rules, but you could be Mocha. The Ketzos, citing this principle of the Ramban, says, no, the exact opposite. You could alter the Torah rules of Dinei Mamonis. Why? Because of this statement. Shelo amra Torah sheyischayev ela b'ritzono shelzeh. That's the Ramban. And the Ketzos interprets that to mean you can alter the Torah rules because haTorah lo chivaso ela b'ritzono shelzeh. V'im ein ritzono b'chiyuvo leka chiyuv klal. So what do you think that means in this context, Yakir? It's a way of saying that even like some of the choshen mishpat dinim really depend on your desire to for hiskaivos. Is that the idea?
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that a pretty radical interpretation of certain choshen mishpat principles? So he's saying nezikin. You could say Al-Menashe Ein Lachalai Din Nezikin, because Nezikin is there to, I guess, like, support your Ratzon. And if your Ratzon is not to be bound by it, that's totally okay. Is that the vibe you're getting at here?
Yeah.
Do you think it's right to say that he's suggesting that some of these dinim are there to protect your rights, and you know that's only coherent insofar as you want to assert these rights, or they're there to give you certain powers, and it's up to you whether you want to assert those powers or make use of those powers? Gabe, you have a thought on this?
Not yet. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Why are you defining Bertzono or translating Bertzono as to protect his interests?
Right. Well, what does Bertzono mean to you? So the Ramban and the Ktos, the way the Ktos reads the Ramban is that you could say Al-Menashe Ein Lachalai Din Nezikin. And the reason why you could say that is because Lo Chivaso Torah Ela Bertzono Shalzeh. Gabe? Gabe?
I'm still working through this. I want to read Redstone as like a I think a better paradigm for thinking about this is a halva or some kind of contract between two people where both need to opt in. And then it's clear the Torah's chiyuvim are contingent on the ratzon of both parties.
Even for
Ono? The Nazik paradigm is harder for me to work with.
Even for Ono, you want to say that? So are you saying that, like, let's say sharing ksus is there as like a nice default option for the woman? Right? The Torah is just assuming that she wants this, but if she wants something different, like the Torah has like a stam das b'nei adam is to desire certain things. It offers this as like under that assumption, but that assumption is challengeable, and that's what a Tanai is. A Tanai is saying that the assumption doesn't hold true in this case. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm suggesting. I mean, and then we have to factor in the chatzayin question. So you may not be able to do that with kiddushin, but in areas where that is possible.
But in sharing ksus, the ksus, I mean, the ksus is saying that anytime you masnamash kazu b'torah b'davar shel mamon, it's valid mishum da torah lo chivasa ela b'ritzono shel zeh. So walking through the example of sharing sus. So the idea is that the Torah only wants the woman to have sharing sus insofar as she herself wants sharing sus. Is that the idea, Gabe?
Yeah, there's a meeting of minds, or there's some kind of agreement that's taking place between two parties. The Torah has some way of mediating that agreement. But what affects the agreement, or what gives the agreement its teeth and its chalos, is the fact that both parties are voluntarily entering into it. So that indicates or to us that the parties have significant power and influence in dictating the terms of the agreement.
So you want to say that So the way the Rashba would look at sharing sus is to say, look, sharing sus is a part of every Jewish marriage. And there's a separate principle. You could always be mocha, right? You have this flistery mocha. The ksosis formulation is much stronger, and it says, no. Sher and ksos are only a part of the marriage insofar as the isha wants sher and ksos, right? Because the Torah is only offering it to her, like, insofar as she wants it. That's the way the ksos put it.
Something like that.
Okay. Don't you think that's like a surprising way to look at some of the dine momentis principles, or you're totally fine with that, Gabe?
No, so that's where I'm gonna hit a wall. When I start applying this to Nezik, I think it becomes much more complicated. I think, because there aren't two parties and there is an explicit ritzon being expressed, generally speaking, in cases of Nezik. So kras ksusi amanasli pater is one of those cases where there's an explicit expression of das in advance of the meisa Nezik. So perhaps like that's why it works. Although like maybe you can like move into some kind of social contract theory where like every party is like willingly implicitly giving their ratzon to enter into the social agreement of Nezik. I don't know.
Would you say, Gabe, that the Torah only protects me with Hilchos Mezikin insofar as I want to be protected by Hilchos Mezikin? Let's say in the pure mummanus parts of Mezikin, right? Atar lechibaso, ala britzono shelzeh, the main ritzono bechiyuvo lakachiyuv klah.
Yeah, I think that's a viable way of reading kras ksusi.
Right.
Right. I mean, the opposite of Mezikin. So clearly, and I think that's right. I think you could waive your right to be compensated for Nezik.
Yeah. It's a really interesting. I think it's a really interesting view. The idea is that I'm not just like waiving the claim from being mochel. It's like I'm undercutting the basis for the Torah rule in the first place.
That's a more radical formulation than I had in mind, but I think it is the logical position that I was stating.
Yeah, and it's consistent. Definitely consistent with the Ksosis language, right?
Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen the whole Ksosis inside. So I'll admit my.
But you'll look it over for Thursday, and you'll tell me if you disagree.
Later.
Okay, so then we have the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish cites the Rashba, also very upset with the Rashba. He says, "V'lechora, mashma midvarav de'ein plutasam beikar adinav mashmos halashon b'yafshar lomarkein." Like the Ktsos's criticism of the Rashba makes the machlokas or manner of Yehuda sound just like a machlokas how to interpret the language. When I say stam on condition that you don't have sharing Ktsos, is the stam interpretation in terms of Mechila, or is it in terms of attempting to alter the Torah rules? He asks, he tries to cite some machloksim that he thinks undercut the Rashba's theory, Alma de Pligi Bigger Adin, not just in Mashmaos HaLashon. And he says this, Ela Kavanas HaRashba, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, K'shem Mochel Zechuso, Sheyesh Lo Lezakos, have a kedin she'ar mechilas mamon. The low have oker din Torah. Rabbi Meir Savar, kivan de mochel has chus b'shas chalos hadin, lo chashev kedin mochel mamon, ela ke oker iker din Torah. So how's he trying to explain away the Rashba's explanation of the machlokas?
Yeah, this is nice. I like this. So he's saying that mechila is a post facto kind of or happens after the contract or after you've opted into the din, which is why it doesn't run into problems of merit because you've accepted the din Torah and now you're just waiving some of the rights that come along in this particular instance. But at the time of the chalos of the din, you are also trying to opt out of certain Torah stipulated clauses, then you're more directly being Dover Min HaTorah. And the question here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is whether if you're mochel this chus at the time of that you opt in, whether that is a form of mechila or whether that's a form of oker davar min Torah.
Yeah, especially I like that last formulation. Telling the Chazon Ish wants to say that the Rashba is saying everybody thinks we're dealing with a kind of mechila here. Like I'm waving my right. And then there's this legal or / conceptual question. What does it mean to be mochel my right? When you're mochel your right at the time of the agreement or at the time of the chalos, is that tantamount to altering the Torah rule? Or is that just like a legally binding way of blocking yourself from asserting your right later on? So, like mitzias wise, everybody agrees that you're trying to be mochel the zchus. The machlokas of Yehuda and Rav Meir is what is being mochel the zchus b'shas hachalos amount to? Right, Gabe?
Yeah, that's right.
So one of the things that this brings me back to is just one of the core questions in the sugya, which is, you know, it's just this question itself depends on how the Torah rules are set up. If the Torah rules are set up in this modally indefeasible way, where they can't be changed, they're rigid in that sense, then, you know, there's an argument to me that when you're mochel v'zchus, you're really trying to alter alter the Torah rules. I guess our mayor is saying, like, no, there's a difference between doing that and simply doing an action that blocks you from asserting your Torah right later on. Gabe, you have further thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that the question of whether kavana matters, the question which Tosfos raised, whether he is kavana l'akor davar min HaTorah, is very essential here. Which is, are we evaluating his how rebellious this action is, or are we bothered by etzem hovda that he's modifying a din Torah?
Right.
So I think in your formulation, where he's waving a right that the Torah grants him, like that feels safe because he's not modifying the Din Torah. He's just making a separate agreement not to receive the Din Torah.
Yeah. So there's this delicate work here trying to figure out what does it mean to be Oker Din Torah, right? So am I Oker Din Torah when I'm just like waving my right? And that's what the Chazon Ish is suggesting is really going on in the Rashba. Again, it's hard to get like deeper traction on the dialectic here. Let's close today's discussion with this last machlokas about the status of Ona. So what's this machlokas? So the Mishnah said, the Gemara said that according to Yehuda b'davar shel mamon tino kayim. So if you say So Adam, what does Rashi define as the Devar Shel Mamon?
Sharing sus.
Yeah, sharing sus. So what's left out there?
Oh no.
Yeah, Ona is left out. Rashi Bamitzian and Aleph is clear about this. Revita Devar Shel Mamon sharing sus, nitan le mechila. Aval Ona shehit sar haguf lo nitan le mechila. So what's Rashi's argument for why Ona is not considered Davar Shel Mamon Tino Kayim? Adam?
Shara Kassus, he says, arguments they're given from the onset. So they could be Mocha, but Ona, since it's only later on, right?
That's not what he says. He says Shehid Tzar Aguf. What does that mean?
Oh, 1 second. Nitan L'Nechila, B'harei Macha, Aval Ona, Shara Tzar Aguf, it's like related to the actual body. I guess it's the pain of the body, or
benefit. Yeah, it's like, I guess there's like emotional distress or some sort of psychological distress. Right. That's not something that's waivable.
I want to say, you know, I think the point is lo nitan l'mechila. It's not there from the onset. You can't be mocha something that's not there. That can't be there. Right, there's nothing. It's, yeah. No.
You don't think it has to do. So how do you explain Sar HaGuf?
I mean, I think the point is, since it's rooted in Sar HaGuf, there is nothing. You don't have anything in front of you to be mocha. So like, to compare to like a case of just Nizikin, you can't be mocha from the onset. You can't be matnef from your right of Nizikin. Why? Because there's nothing there in front of you to be matnef. You don't know what the Nizikin is going to be. On the other side of it, when you're told in court, okay, it's $100, now you know what you're actually giving up. Now you know what you're being mocha.
So you're offering like Dar Shlomo Liolam type of theory for why Ona is different from sharing sis. Is that the idea?
Basically. I mean, that's what it almost sounds like to me, based on Rashi.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Interesting suggestion. And you don't think it's, you know, so you don't think Rashi is about the fact that sharing sis are literally about providing monetary goods and Sar HaGuf is like a non-monetary type of obligation.
No, I think it's rooted in the nitan l'mechila and lo nitan l'mechila.
Okay. I think that's a really good point. So your suggestion is that Rashi is just saying, hey, just like we saw earlier, some chaluyos are divisible and defeasible. Some chaluyos are nitan l'mechila, some aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on Rashi's distinction between Ona and sharing sus? Yakir, do you agree with Adam? You have a different view?
Actually, one second, I completely misread that. I was reading Nitan like Nitan Lemichilat, not like Nitan Lemichilat. I take that back. It'd be formulated.
Back here, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I don't. I prefer reading Rashi here is just that he's distinguishing between things that are monetary and things that are not monetary. I don't know if I have so much to say beyond that.
Why should Maslamash Kasim Tarav Dabar Shalmamon be limited to what's the significance of like actual monetary stuff?
Yeah, like, I don't think that like the explanation for that is in Rashi. Like beyond the mechila point. But
I mean, just that some things lie beyond the range of mechila.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could speculate, but
nothing clearer than that. The Rambam runs with Rashi. The Rambam doesn't give us an explanation, but he says that for sharing sus, the Tanai is chal. Says Ketad Rambam Bav Yud Kiddush Isha Al Tanai She'ema Alav Sher Tzivona She'omer Lo Bechzus V'Sher Tanacha Kaim Leishelu Tanai Shel Mamon Ema Baona Tanacha Batal She'ator Echtiba Uscha Baona Harizim Kedushes V'Atachai Baonasa Bein Biad Chalifter Asma B'Tanacha. The Rambam doesn't really give an explanation. I think the Rambam just says that like the Torah is Mechayev you. I guess if you were to borrow the Ramban's language, you would say some halachic chaluyos depend on the ratzon of the person. Some halachic chaluyos are just independent of the ratzon. So the Ram doesn't give an explanation, but he definitely runs with Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara that B'davar Shel Mamon is limited to Sher Vixus, and Ona Chiyuv is non-waivable. Now, Mordechai cites the Yerushalmi that appears to disagree. He cites the Yerushalmi and he says, Yerushalmi said, Ketzad, what's a case of Tano Kayim in Dabar Shel Mamon? Amar Lisha, I read Mekudeshes, Liam Nashi, and the Fly Shek, so on, I raise Mekudeshes with Tano Kayim. And the inference is that the entire Tanai is Kayim. the Mordechai says, Mashma de ona afu kishel mamon. Kivan dal yidei tznai efshel levatlav. Lo kipir es Rashi. So he thinks that the Yerushalmi implies that ona is waivable. And the Ritva also says this. He cites Rashi and the Rambam, who think that ona is non-waivable. And he says, Eino nachon. He says, V'chein pirish Rambam. The ona lav davar shevim mamon hu. V'eino nachon. Dehanos haguf kim mamon chashev l'inyan zeh. And he cites the Yerushalmi to support this view. So what do you make of this line in the Ritva? And what do you make of the actual dialectic, the Shaka Vikarya, about whether we should view ona as a davar shel mamon?
I mean, it seems like the whole idea of considering it to be same as mamon is something saying like you get hana from mamon, you get hana from ona.
Oh. There's definitely a school of thought out there, and then you could connect this Ritva to a bunch of Ritvas in Kiddushin about Kiddushin with hana. And say, oh, this is like a theory about money and money being the same thing as benefit. So hana is just like, you know, there's Bitcoin, there's cash, there's stocks, and there's hana. Like they're all just fungible forms of value.
Yeah.
Is that right, Adam?
Yeah, and also part of it, the thing about it is, so the counter argument is that sure consists of something you could achieve with mamon from an outside source.
Yeah.
Ona, you cannot achieve from the outside source.
Okay, good. So these are all just like, good. I think you're right that one way of looking at this is how much is hana convertible into money, right? Or how much is it the same species as money? And that's going to determine whether it falls under Tanai Shavu Mamon. Gabe, you have a comment on this?
No, in Adam's approach, he's just quibbling on details with Rashi and the Rambam, but he's not disagreeing conceptually. He accepts the distinction that, like, for whatever arbitrary reason, mamon, snaim works by mamon, and so the question is only whether ona is considered mamon.
Correct. That's definitely the form of Adam's position. I wonder, see, the way I would rather think about this is that there's nothing special about mamon per se. And you saw this in some of the formulations of the Rishonim. The reason why Kol Tanai Shev Mamon works, according to Yehuda, is not because there's something special about cash value or converting things into cash. Although I guess you could have an argument about like Afuche Mitar Talamali. Hold on 1 second, guys. I guess you could have a theory that it's like Afuche Mitar Talamali. You know, I could always give you the cash check, so you could always cash it and give it back to me. You could say something like that for why Mechila should work. But I would say the more basic, I think the better thing to say is that there's a common reason, the underlying reason for why Kol Tanai Shev Mamon works is like the Ramban said, like the Ketzov said, the Torah is giving you this right or this benefit to help you. So the duty is owed to you in a certain way. And since you're the interest holder, you have the right, like you have the right to say that it's not in my interest to assert this. It's not in my interest to be the recipient of this. So when we think of Kol Davar Shev Mamon Tino Kayim, it's not about cash. It's not about value. It's not about hana being fungible with cash. It's really about sort of like the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro principle. Is the Torah setting up the duty to be owed to you for your interests? Or is there some objective, impartial reason for it existing? And then whenever it's there for you to be the recipient, the beneficiary of for your interests, then of course it'll be waivable. Because like the Torah has no interest in like asserting your privileges greater than you have an interest in asserting them. Does that make sense? So ona would for sure fall in, ona could fall into that category. You could say, if ona is about providing a wife a certain security or comfort or some recoverable interest in the marriage, then it's owed to her. It's her right to assert. It's nitan lemechila also, right? I think that would be the way of thinking about why ona should fall under davar shel mamon, even though it's clearly not convertible into some cash value. That make sense?
Yeah, I like that a lot. Do you have an explanation for, like, how do you explain the position of Rashi and the Rambam?
Yeah. I think there are two ways to go. I think you could just say the easy way out is to say, oh, Rashi and the Rambam, by Adam's view, it's just like, or it's like a fuche mitar delamali, like, you know, it's about, you could always give me the cash payment and I could always give it back, so let's just call it even. And you can't really do that with Ono, right? That's like the easy way out. I think the more, like, maybe conceptually intricate argument would be there's a pur vu component to Ona, and that's like more than just about protecting the wife's interests in the marriage, in which case it's not really hers to waive. And there's a lot of interesting evidence that shows that Ona is connected to Puravu that we could look at that to support that. You know, so that would be the machlokas then, a tension about whether we view Puravu as like something owed to her or something that's like part of the policy institution of marriage in general. Make sense? Yeah, have a thought on that, Gabe? Further thought on it? Or
I really like
how that. I wish somebody had said that more explicitly. I'm curious about Rashi's, still curious about Rashi's formation of Tzara Guf.
Yeah, I think this formulation of Rashi leans into kind of what Adam was saying, that maybe it's just not convertible into cash, and Rashi's thinking of it narrowly in terms of money is the thing that's nitan lemechila. But yeah, that would be against this whole mahala.
Just a thought. Don't hold me to this, but Tzara Guf sounds like the inverse of Hanasa Guf, the reverse of Hanasa Guf, in the sense that, like, do we consider the withholding of Ona to be Tzar or Ona to be a form of Ona, in the sense that, like, is waiving this right a form of, like, more immoral in the sense that you're causing a woman Tzar for something which...
It's like almost abusive rather than withholding a benefit.
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, I like that. So that would be a way of saying that, you know, it's just like the Torah doesn't really, like, for, like, even if a woman says she doesn't, well, give a better mashal, it's like well, it's a question of whether you could waive your right to hikani ptani, like to injure me, like could you injure yourself type thing. So maybe similar over here, the Torah has an interest in not allowing women to inflict this type kind of pain on themselves in marriage. Yeah, that's a nice read. Okay, so let's stop here. For our next chabura, I want to talk about the Vahi Anav Gamur Meshave Nafshe. And in general, this question whether you need a kinyan for that. Rabbi Yochanan's view is that sometimes when you get hana, you could swap out an actual maisa kinyan. Now, in the Rishonim here, talk about an interesting stira between Ninches and Sadi Dalid. On Sadi Dalid, it seems that you could switch between the liability rules of a Shemachina and Shemar Sachar without a kinyan, just by hana. The Gemara Bavitzin Ninches seems to say that if you're a Shomer Karka or Shomer Hektish, and you want to be Mischayev yourself for Dine Shomrim, you need a Kenyan to do that. So a lot of Rishonim want to know why in one case does it seem like you need a Kenyan, in the other case it's sufficient to be the recipient of Hana. So there's a whole range in the Rishonim here, which I brought down on the source sheet. So if you have further thoughts on Masla Mash Kasim BaTorah in Davar Shel Mamon in general, the Share of Ksus discussion, let's maybe spend a few minutes on that at the beginning of Chabura. But I think then we'll be happy. Then we can move on and finish up the parak with Bahi Hanah discussion. And then next week we'll start Shoel, the nature of a Shoel, and a Socher. All right? Great. Shkoyach, everybody. See you all. Thank you. Oh, sorry. See you all Thursday. Right, Thursday. So
yeah.
Scott, see you guys.